Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 143. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with my technical editor, Peter Loschen. Peter, welcome.
Hi, Rob.
Peter, we are back.
We are.
It's been, I just realized this shortly before we got back in here, we've had our own stuff going on, you on your side of search security, me on the other on the news side. We have not been in here in many months. We haven't had a Risk and Repeat podcast in about 3 months. We took a sort of summer hiatus. The last episode we did was with Tenable's Amit Uren, who, well, you weren't on that, Peter, but I'm saying we, the royal we, and we talked to him about some of the stuff going on at Tenable. It was a good conversation, but we haven't done a podcast in about 3 months. And here's the kicker, Peter, as you know, you're leaving. This is our last podcast together. You are leaving for destinations unknown, not unknown to me. I know where you're going. I'm very happy for you, but it is a sad day. Sad exclamation point, as one might say.
Let's not be sad that it's over. Let's be happy that it happened.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. But yes, I will miss doing this with you. I'm glad we get a chance to go one final time here in Chernobyl.
As am I.
And I know this is your favorite subject. I know when I sat down and was like, Peter, I got a great idea for this last podcast. We can go out with a real bang. You were hoping it wasn't going to be this topic, but it is. We are delving back into the Russia investigation and the DNC hack. This is not something we wanted to do. You definitely did not want to do this, but unfortunately, I think our hand was forced a little bit. This is back in the news in a big way, thanks to President Trump. I mean, this is not something that we did. This is something that, right? I don't want to take the blame for this, right?
No.
Yeah.
Let's not.
So last week, the White House released not a transcript.
Correct.
A partial memo with a summary of the discussion based on notes and whatever recordings or whatever. It's not the official transcript, but a discussion between Trump and the Ukraine President Zelensky, and it had an interesting discussion on there. It was released because there's all this attention about Trump sort of asking Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden, or rather Joe Biden's son, who sat on the board of a gas company, Ukrainian gas company. None of this matters for our purposes. I'm just giving a little context here. And the White House was like, no, there was nothing going on, and we'll prove it. Here's a memo with a partial transcript, and this is what we talked about. And I don't know what they were thinking when they read that transcript and thought that it was okay, but whatever, regardless. So they released this, and we found out, because this hadn't come up previously, that there was a discussion about the server. The server, Peter, your favorite subject. I wish people could see the pain on Peter's face right now. It's like, oh man, we're doing this again. This is like Sisyphus, right? I mean, this is
more or less, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's, that's the human condition.
Yeah.
As well.
So there's this discussion about the server, and essentially we're going to do a dramatic reading of this exchange here in a minute, just so people can get the full sort of picture of what's going on. But apparently Trump asked Zelensky to find the server in reference, we believe, to the DNC hack in 2016. He said that he had heard that the server was in Ukraine. This is news to me. I had never heard this before. We went down a little bit of a rabbit hole last week of conspiracy theories and hoaxes. The larger point is we wanted to discuss this and sort of the implications for InfoSec, for attribution, for CrowdStrike, and just the political, the political sphere right now, and cyber attacks and how sensitive this stuff is. But first, I think we can't really, Peter, and I know you don't want to do this, we can't really explain accurately to people how crazy this is without reading it. So if you would start, you know, would you, if you would play the part of Zelensky here and read, we're going to pick up sort of early on in the transcript where they're talking about Russia-Ukraine relationships.
Not a transcript.
Not a son of a, not a transcript. You're right. And I will play the part of Trump.
Sure.
So, Peter, if you will do the honors.
Okay. I would also like to thank you for your great support in the area of defense. We are ready to continue to cooperate for the next steps. Specifically, we are almost ready to buy more javelins from the United States for defense purposes.
I would like you to do us a favor, though, because our country has been through a lot and Ukraine knows a lot about it. I would like you to find out what happened with this whole situation with Ukraine. They say CrowdStrike. I guess you have one of your wealthy people, the server. They say Ukraine has it. There are a lot of things that went on, the whole situation. I think you're surrounding yourself with some of the same people. I would like to have the Attorney General call you or your people, and I would like you to get to the bottom of it. As you saw yesterday, the whole nonsense ended with a very poor performance by a man named Robert Mueller, an incompetent performance, but they say a lot of it started with Ukraine. Whatever you can do, it's very important that you do it if it's possible. End discussion. Now, Peter, when you first read this, heard this, saw this, how many flights of stairs did you want to throw yourself down?
Well,
like, what was your reaction? I mean, honestly, I thought I had heard everything about sort of the DNC hack, but this was like this Ukraine thing was kind of news to me. I didn't know this was going on. Did you?
No. Yeah. But later, eventually I heard that this all stemmed out of crazy paranoid conspiracy theories broadcasting on
8chan and
so on.
Yeah.
The places that don't bother to do, you know, fact-checking or anything.
Right, sort of armchair investigators.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure that they really believe this either. I think this is sort of just...
It's speculation.
Yeah, I mean, it's muck that they're trying to...
Yeah, I don't...
It's
I don't
QAnon
even wanna,
type stuff.
I wouldn't even want to just give it the label of conjecture because that implies rational thinking behind it. It's all... There's a lot of BS coming out of some places that, I mean, eventually you have to just stop paying attention to it because it's clearly, it's not rational, it's not true, and it's not factual.
So, yeah.
Sure, if crazy people are saying that Ukraine was somehow involved in this and got, I'm doing the air quote thing.
Yes, you are.
The server. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just, you know, one of the many things that I tried to sort of put aside and not think about during, you know, working hours.
Yeah, and that's your way of saying thanks a lot to me for pulling you into this, because I did. Well, you should have seen this. I mean, you and I talked about this during the day a little bit last week when we were working on this. We should know that transcript was from August. It was not... It was sort of right after, I think.
Was it August or
yeah,
July?
Whenever, I think it was August when Mueller testified, because he references, you know, sort of the poor performance by Mueller. It was when he was called, you know, the Democrats asked him to testify before, you know, a committee hearing. And, you know, that's what Trump was referencing. It was released, last week.
Right. I'm looking at the document. It says July 25th,
9:03. Oh, there you go, July.
9:03 yes, to
9:30. You were right. You were right. See, that's why I have you in here. What am I going to do when you're gone? So you know that Michael Heller, senior reporter, Social Security, he was working on this yesterday, last week, rather. And we were sitting there going back and forth going, what is this? What is he referring to? And to give you a brief summary, it's basically, it looks like Trump has sort of confused or sort of combined like three different things going on with sort of alternate theories or conspiracy theories with the DNC hack, and one of them being the VIPS theory, which we talked about
2 years ago.
2 years ago, that it was an inside job based on the.
Wasn't it the timing of the.
Yes, the download packets. Speeds, yeah. And it had to be local. It had to be sort of on device and.
Right. Yeah. Remember, we ripped that to shreds. That was just crazy stuff.
But I mean, you've written books. And you know, and you did. You
don't need to read a book to know the difference between, you know, what's factual and rational and what's not. But yeah.
And I'll encourage anybody out there to read Computer Weekly's story about that inside job theory. They basically, Duncan Campbell, a freelance journalist for Computer Weekly, did a huge, huge piece that sort of blew the lid off of it. Revealed the identity of the so-called expert that forwarded, you know, that pushed this theory to the VIPS committee, the intelligence veterans that initially supported it, like Bill Binney, and found out who this guy really was and found out what his credentials were and basically what he had been up to. And it's really an eye-opener. And I encourage everybody to read it. It's a fantastic piece. Anyway, so there's that theory that it was never the Russians, that it was an inside job. There's another theory that CrowdStrike hid evidence from the FBI. This is actually a common one. Like, there's a lot of Trump supporters out there that are convinced that the FBI never got any evidence. They definitely didn't get direct access to the servers. CrowdStrike came in and took images of the affected systems. And what was it? It was like 100+, you know, physical and cloud servers, I think.
I want to say 130, but yeah.
Yeah.
At least 100.
So that they hid the evidence, and they're the only ones that have the evidence, and how can we believe them when they never gave, you know, the server, quote unquote, over to the FBI? And then there's the other point, the Ukraine angle, which is there's a lot of people that believe that a wealthy Ukrainian owns CrowdStrike, and that they're involved in this sort of think tank, Atlantic Council, that's anti-Russian, and well, of course, you know, CrowdStrike would want to frame Russia, and you know, one of their co-founders, one of their, I believe he's the CTO now, Dmitry, is, you know, he was born in Russia. He was a Russian citizen. He moved here many years ago.
Wasn't he a citizen of the USSR?
Yes.
Okay, so yes. That's different.
See, you are keeping me honest, Peter.
Because Ukraine was formerly an SSR.
That's true. So. That's true. And then they became independent 91, 92?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I want to say.
So the server fallacy, honestly, we all know, like most technical people know, there isn't one server. There's many servers. It's not a physical server. But do you think that most people, I mean this honestly, not just your average, you know, John Q, you know, out there, but even like the technical people, do you think that most people know that the FBI doesn't typically take position? I mean,
we've all seen news footage of FBI agents carting stacks of computer equipment out of locations where they
are
investigating. Yeah, they're raiding or whatever. But
in terms of organizations that have been attacked.
Right. I mean, maybe they – sometimes they might. I think people conflate a lot of things together. And they assume that the FBI is going to come in with big trucks and carry out all the computer servers. But that's not how
it
works, especially not with – now that we have the cloud where the computers are all over the world. But, yeah, I mean – people may assume that, but I don't think that people that are knowledgeable, and by knowledgeable I mean people who understand that Rudy Giuliani is not a cybersecurity expert by any stretch of the imaginations. Especially there was a clip recently of him talking at a conference somewhere just the other day, which I mean, if you think that he
it
is
was
an
embarrassing.
Expert,
it was embarrassing.
Yeah, if you
it
think really he's bad. an expert, I think that you might follow along with the rest of this stuff.
Yeah.
But if you're rational and you think about it and you look at trusted and trustworthy sources for for this stuff, you know that it's all just cock and ball.
Yeah. I bring up this question because I think you're right. I think most technical people and the InfoSec community knows that Giuliani is basically a fraud on cybersecurity matters and perhaps others. Who knows? And they probably know that it's not practical and it's not sort of standard procedure for the FBI to go in for an organization that's been hit with a cyber attack to just go in and take, you know, sort of physical possession of all the affected hardware. It's not very practical. I mean, you would be knocking that organization further offline for an indeterminate period of time. It is interesting, though, because, and, you know, I bring this up because I had a discussion. I was talking about sort of, you know, this sort of thing, not the Russia investigation or the DNC, but talking about this type of thing, incident response with some folks. And I heard a story about, like, there was an organization who had told, I'll say an unnamed company that does incident response, they said they wanted to handle an incident by themselves on their own. They didn't want to involve law enforcement. And the incident response company basically said, you know, I think it's in your best interest because, this is a cybercrime outfit that we think is hit you is trying to, extort money or you get a ransom. And we just think, and they said, well, if we call the authorities, if we call the FBI, that's just going to make things worse because they're going to come in here and just box up all of our systems and take them away. And the incident response guy is like, No, that's not. They're not going to like box everything up and take it out and just leave you hanging. That's not how it works. But I thought that was interesting that an enterprise, and who knows how big this customer was, it could have been midsize or whatever, but that they didn't know that they were sort of under the impression that, the police are and the FBI are just going to come in and, you know, it's evidence and they're going to box it up and take it.
Yeah, I mean, there's been computer crime almost ever since there's been computers.
Yeah.
And along with that, there's been forensic computing. I mean, it's not new stuff. It's not state of the art or anything.
No.
To have rules and protocols for what you do when you have a system that's under attack. I mean, there's lots of really clever things that the defenders do when they suspect that a system has been breached or attacked or whatever to get a forensic image of the systems that are under attack or that have been attacked and maintain that in a way that will be acceptable to a judge and a jury because that's what they have to do.
Yeah.
So it's not like you know, just because it's new to somebody like Trump that he's never heard of this before and he just discovered it.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen this before with other things where, you know, most people don't know this, but there are a lot of ways that law enforcement and incident response people, techniques that they use to respond in ways that don't disrupt the organization and that get all of the evidence that they need.
Yeah, and a lot of times, I mean, just with incident response, like, you know, this is different than law enforcement, but they may not even, like, show up to the physical location of that office that or that organization that was affected. They might just do everything remotely. I don't know if the FBI, I mean, I'm pretty sure the FBI, probably their cyber division. I mean, I know, and just some of the sessions that I've caught that have been led by law enforcement people or people, ex-law enforcement people, they like to have people, you know, like on site. But still, it's not. We're talking about the cyber world. This is not sort of, you know, the same as you said as, you know, sort of other types of crime.
So. Well, and the fact that some of the servers may be in a cloud somewhere means that you're not going. You know, maybe you do send somebody out to look at the actual hardware at some point.
But can you imagine if you were a cloud provider and you know this goes back to the Ireland data center, you know, Microsoft and the DEA case, and I don't know if folks remember that one, but it was basically the Department of Justice was trying to get, you know, a data center in Ireland that Microsoft was operating to turn over emails that, you know, for a case they were working on, and it's just like, can you imagine if the FBI went to, like, I don't know, 5, 10 different cloud providers or data center operators, and just like, shut everything down. We got to get in here, and like, we got to physically look at this server. That would be kind of tough. And I'll just point out that there's a document, there's a manual, literally a manual for the Department of Justice. It's called Searching and Seizing Computers and Obtaining Electronic Evidence in Criminal Investigations. That's the title of it. And there's a section of it on page, I think it's 77 or 78, where they talk about this. They say, in many cases, rather than seize the entire computer for offsite review, agents can instead create a digital copy of the hard drive that is identical to the original in every relevant respect. This copy is called an image copy. And they go on to say basically why they do this, and it's totally fine, and so on and so forth. I'll grant you the CrowdStrike, the DNC hack was a little different because CrowdStrike was the one that took the images, examined them, and then transmitted them to the authorities. But the authorities never sort of said, well, you know, we don't buy this. We think there's something fishy here. I mean, they made cases against Russian nationals, Internet Research Agency, and other organizations they think were tied into the DNC hack. So, you know, there was never any sort of dispute from the government about the validity of those images that CrowdStrike took. So, I mean, I think that's worth pointing out, not that we want to go back and, like, relitigate the case for Russian involvement in the DNC hack. I know, you know, I'm not trying to make your eyes bleed, Peter, or have you pass out here in your last podcast. But I do think it's worth pointing out. Now we're getting to the point here about what this means for CrowdStrike. I mean, so we know what it means sort of for attribution. I think most people sort of are solid on the case against Russia, and they believe CrowdStrike. CrowdStrike's got a pretty good reputation. They're well known. They're a public company now. We know what this means sort of for muddying the waters in the political sphere, but what do you think this means for them long term? Like, the knives are out for this company. There are people saying they're part of a vast leftist conspiracy. They're you know, in the pocket of the Ukraine government. They're doing this. They're doing that. I feel for them, honestly.
Well, I mean, look what's happened to Kaspersky.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I mean,
two totally different scenarios, but yes,
totally yeah. different. Yeah. And on top of that, Kaspersky is a Russian company, and it does have a suspiciously foreign-sounding name. Whereas CrowdStrike is not, you know, on its face, it's not. It's an American organization,
right?
It's
right.
Founded by American citizens.
Yep.
As far as I know.
Yes.
And the, you know, whoever is being singled out as being somehow suspicious by not being an American actually is an American. So, CrowdStrike has pretty good PR people, I think. They're going about their business as usual. I got a pitch from them this morning, I want to say. Nothing to do with this, of course.
No.
And,
no.
You know, so one can only hope that this is the kind of thing that will be, you know, clearly and plainly ridiculous, as opposed to the thing having to do with Kaspersky, where there were, you know, there are, you know, I don't want to get into that one either, but
no,
but yeah, I mean, there's really no reason why CrowdStrike should suffer as a result of this. It doesn't look like they are. I just checked their stock price before coming.
It's dipped a little, but I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
You know, that could just be sort of Trump effect. Like any company that Trump mentions negatively, they might take a small hit sort of in the short term, and then, you know, a lot of them bounce back. I don't
know. Well, I mean, they're not suffering today on the market.
Well, there you go.
I mean, they're down a couple of points, but a couple of percent, but
yeah, we should note we're recording this on October 2nd, Wednesday. So yep. But,
I mean, like a month or so ago, they were trading near 100, you know, in the 90s, and their drop has been over the last couple of months. So I'm going to
That's probably not.
It's not. Yeah, it's not. Tied not, to
it's
this.
Not entirely yeah. related. I mean, this just happened.
Yeah.
I know that the conspiracy theories about the DNC hack and what CrowdStrike did or didn't do have been going on for a long time. You know, thanks to folks like Roger Stone and other sort of nut jobs out there that have been pushing these theories to sort of muddy the water.
Yeah, and the other part of that is that as an IPO, the IPOs they rock it up
yep.
and then they drop, and you know that's how they work. It's sort of everybody wants to get in at first,
yeah.
and then they buy it, and then they see nothing's happening,
yeah.
and they sell it.
Yeah, I do think it's weird though. If I was CrowdStrike, you know, they did work for the Republican Party as well. If you remember, we talked about this last year. There was an incident shortly before the midterm election. The National Republican Congressional Committee was breached, and I think whoever was a threat group got, you know, into their email server or whatever. CrowdStrike was hired by the Republicans. I think they were already on, if I remember this correctly, they were already sort of hired on retainer with the NRCC, as it were. But they investigated that as well. And I'm sure they went through the same sort of protocol that they did before, which is, the Republicans don't want all of their data and their email, you know, having the FBI or whoever, especially in this political environment, reading through all their stuff. So they probably said, CrowdStrike, go in, take images of the server, send them to the FBI. And I kind of wonder why they don't highlight that. Like, hey, we've worked for the Republicans too. We did the same thing here. If we're so dirty, then why did they, or we're so compromised, why did they use it? I mean, yes, you can't argue with fools. I get that. But just for their own sort of PR and sort of, defense of their image, I think that's a pretty good response to at least shut some of the people up. But
yeah. But on the other hand, I think one school of thought says when this kind of crazy, unfounded, irrational, illogical kind of accusations start flying, the more attention you pay to them, even to debunk them, the more attention
yeah.
they get. And
that's the thing. Like we debated that. Like, should we do something on this? Should we? And it seemed hard to ignore just because so many other places were already talking about it. National news, mainstream news. At least we could kind of do something on it for our readers and say, here's what we think is going on. Here's why it's crazy. I don't know. I think there's merits to both ways. But I guess the last question for you on this subject, Peter, do you think this is reality now? We're just going to have to deal with these types of theories. There's going to be a portion of the population that is never going to believe the truth or the government's version of events here about the DNC hack and CrowdStrike's report and all that, that it's just we're sort of beyond the point of no return.
Well, I'd like to hope that we're not past that, where, you know, the fact that we've got people who still believe the Earth is flat, people that believe that vaccines cause diseases worse than the diseases that they prevent.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the fallout from that. I mean, diseases that have been
yeah.
considered eradicated are coming back.
Yeah.
I mean, people over the age of 50 are being told to run out and get shingles vaccine.
Mumps,
because,
yeah. Yep.
Because there's so much measles going around.
Yeah, measles, yep.
And yeah, it seems that there are always going to be gullible people who are not willing to look at actual facts and actual
yeah.
evidence and just go with whatever they think is right, because how could the Earth be round?
Yeah.
I mean, it's flat. Look
yeah.
at it.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping, hoping that the movement of progress continues to to take some of these people and educate them somehow, or
yeah.
make them less
crazy.
Well, or take away the microphone from people who are blasting out things, crazy
yeah.
things like that, and say, and if they're gonna if they're going to talk crazy like that, then let them get a sandwich board and go down to the park and, you know, and announce their craziness rather than give them platforms that allow them to disseminate their thoughts.
Yeah.
Their irrational thoughts to millions. I mean, that's what's the problem.
I will say, you know, to your earlier point, I think it's great. We can take at least some comfort that the InfoSec community hasn't sort of is largely behind this and is not sort of out there taking shots at CrowdStrike or undermining the case or anything like that. Everyone seems to be reasonably. I mean, there was three other vendors that reviewed the evidence that was published by CrowdStrike. Obviously, they didn't have access to the images, so it's. But whatever, it takes some comfort for that. But I wish that sort of rational sort of position and sort of the community's that their support of this would drown out, like you said, some of the voices that are pushing the craziness.
So. I mean, and along those lines, the fact that most of the InfoSec community seems to be rational doesn't mean that it's all rational. As we mentioned,
we know.
Rudy Giuliani considers himself to be a cybersecurity expert.
But yeah, I think you're right. And I wonder where we're going to be in a couple of years or even a year from now as we sort of, you know, turn the corner to the next election, where we're going to be at. I know where you will be at. You'll be somewhere else. But I will say, Peter, I enjoy having you in here to discuss all matters of craziness and InfoSec. It's been a pleasure. And I'm glad we got a chance to record one final episode of the Risk and Repeat podcast before you depart for a new venture and before, I guess, Mike comes in and takes your chair.
It's always been great.
No one
here.
Will be able to replace you, Peter.
Okay. All right. You say that now, but.
Yeah. In a few weeks, I'll be saying, Mike, you're the best co-host I've ever had.
It's always been good to be here, and it's great to get closure on this episode of or this part of my life here at TechTarget. The podcast has always been great.
Except for when we talk about this.
Okay, sure.
Well, thank you, Peter, and thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I hope you have enjoyed our podcast. We certainly have enjoyed them, and we will see you again soon.